Today on Off to the Races, jockey Andre Ramjeet suffered a serious injury last week. His wife Julie speaks out. The Maryland Horse Breeders' annual yearling show is Sunday. Cricket Goodall has a preview. Wanamaker's monthly online horse auction takes place Thursday. Liza Hendricks tells us more. It's all coming up on Off to the Races Radio right now.
We're Off to the Races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio. Thanks so much for joining us this Saturday morning as we talk a little bit of thoroughbred racing and breeding from Maryland across the Mid-Atlantic and around the country. My name's Frank Vespi, and this show, as always, powered by The Racing Biz. TheRacingBiz.com is the website. There's social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatnot. Look for at The Racing Biz. And when you come to the website, you can pick up the free mobile app for your Apple and Android devices. You can always have the latest news and info from the racing world around the Mid-Atlantic at your fingertips. Never be out of touch. Now, as you heard at the top, we've got a lot of things going on today. A couple of really, really interesting interviews to talk about. Let's first talk about Mid-Atlantic Stakes action on top, or on tap. It's easy for me to say. On tap today. Thank you. At Charlestown, they've got the Robert Levitt Stakes for West Virginia-bred three-year-olds. Little Ruru, 3-5 morning line favorite in a five-horse field for the Levitt. Little Ruru, 5-6 this year, already has two stakes wins on the resume for owner-trainer Mike Jones Jr. At Colonial Downs, they have two stakes on tap as well, both turf sprints and the Andy Guest for fillies and mares. There are a dozen horses entered. Trained to Artemis, the 2-1 morning line favorite, off recent wins in the Goldwood at Monmouth Park and the very one at Pimlico. In the Van Cleef for three-year-olds and up, Witty is the 5-2 morning line favorite. The Pennsylvania-bred Witty was second in the Laurel Dash to Four Harp last time out. He's a half-brother to turf-sprinting superstar Caravelle. Caravelle won the Breeders' Cup turf sprint last year, thrashed the boys in the Jaipur most recently, going to be racing at Saratoga quite soon. Defending champ Front Run the Fed also in the Van Cleef. He's 5-1 on the morning line. Finally, at Monmouth Park, it's the biggest day of the year. The day includes the Grade 1 United Nations on the turf. Anybody remember Precious Passion winning the United Nations? I cashed a big ticket on him, but more his style was the thing you remembered. He just went blazing out to the front and went as far as he could, and quite often that was far enough to win Grade 1 races going long. Anyway, Grade 1 United Nations today. Grade 1 Haskell today for three-year-olds going a mile and an eighth on the main track. That race has attracted Kentucky Derby winner Mage, his first start since finishing third in the Preakness. Also, the undefeated Arabian Knight for Bob Baffert. Bluegrass Stakes winner Tappet Trice. But Monmouth Park line maker and analyst Brad Thomas has a couple other horses he's kind of interested in. Here's Brad Thomas on our sister program, Off to the Races Virginia, discussing a couple of other runners worth a gander.
I think Salute the Stars is a mega talent. He's a running machine. His problem is between his ears, however. But midway through his last race, the Pegasus at Monmouth, he and Joel Rosario, his first-time rider, they had been engaging in a bare-knuckles brawl for the first half of that race. Midway through the race, they said, okay, we're going to have a truce. And all of a sudden, the light bulb clicked on, and Salute the Stars was brilliant in the last half of that contest, finishing powerfully and galloping out powerfully. If he can continue to keep his inner demons under control, this horse could be just anything. Extra Anejo, absolute major talent. I would not be surprised if in 3 months this is the best horse in the entire three-year-old crop. I would not be surprised if there is a three-year-old who is mega competitive in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I would not be surprised at all if his name was Extra Anejo. But there's a lot of moving parts to this horse. He's big. He's developing. He's been handled like fine china by Steve Asmussen, his trainer. And now Asmussen has decided to go for the gusto, to run in the grade one. He's never even run in the stakes race. One run in the grade one for $1 million. So his trainer thinks he's ready. He might very well be, but he's giving up a lot in the way of seasoning to other very, very talented horses. If he wins this race, he's going to be absolutely outstanding. But I love his development, and Tyler Gaffalione, his jockey, for my money, is the best American-style dirt rider in the world right now. And maybe the betting public hasn't quite caught up to that yet, but he's phenomenal. He has a plan in every race, and he puts his horse where he needs to put it to go according to that plan. So this is a fantastic race. Tons of talent horse-wise, tons of talent training-wise, and tons of talent jockey-wise. There's a number of jockeys in here who are in the Hall of Fame, and there's three or four more who will be in the Hall of Fame by the time they retire.
That was Brad Thomas from Monmouth Park, a very, very astute handicapper, saying, keep an eye out for Extra Anejo. He's 5-1 on the morning line in the Haskell, and also Salute the Stars. He's 8-1 on the morning line for the Haskell. 14 race program at Monmouth kicks off at 12 noon. So that's kind of the biggest thing happening in the Mid-Atlantic right now. Some other news from last week at Laurel, Sparkle Blue and Eons won a pair of turf stakes, the latter defending his crown in the Prince George's County, while Hybrid Eclipse won the Caesar's Wish on the dirt. Delaware also hosted a pair of turf stakes, those going to 30,000 Kelvin, and the aptly named Really Good winning the Kent Stakes. Quick shout out, thanks to our program supporters, those including the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Wanamakers.com online horse auction site, True Valor, the stallion standing at Northview, and Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. On today's show, Cricket Goodall going to join us at the end of the hour to discuss the MHBA's annual yearling show. That takes place Sunday starting at 9 a.m. in Timonium. Public is welcome. In just a minute or two, Liza Hendricks of Wanamakers.com online horse auction is going to stop by to discuss their monthly auction. That takes place this week, July 27th is the date. In between, we're going to visit with Julie Ramjeet. She's the agent for and wife of injured jockey Andre Ramjeet. She's going to tell us how Andre's doing and some steps that she thinks need to be taken to prevent the next serious jockey injury. So it's an interesting conversation. It's an important topic. You're going to want to stick around for that. That's coming up 10:20-ish or so. Looking ahead, rest of the weekend's racing, Laurel Park Racing Live today, tomorrow as well. Post time 12:25. Delaware Live today, 12:30. Charlestown going at 7 at night. Colonial Downs has Thursday to Saturday schedule, post time 1:30 in New Kent, Virginia. Of course, we've got Saratoga. We have handicapping every day from Saratoga, Colonial, Delaware, Laurel, and twice a week, two out of the 3 days a week for Charlestown. So lots of handicapping available on the racingbiz.com. Okay, let us move forward. Like I said, Julie Ramjeet coming up, Cricket Goodall coming up, but right now let's bring in Liza Hendricks to tell us about this week's horse auction at Wanamakers.com. Liza, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races Radio. A new Wanamaker sale coming up July 27th, and looks like there's a lot of interesting broodmare prospects among the 19 horses entered.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, great catalog. We have a wide range. Some good straight off the track broodmare prospects, and mares in foal, and mares with foals by their side as well. But as you mentioned, have a couple interesting broodmare prospects. One's at Belmont Park, Princess Pinky. and she has just been retired and earned over $175,000 on the track. And then we also have a winning Munnings mare, who's located in Kentucky now, and she's straight off the track as well. So great to see a Munnings on there as well.
Yeah, there's a couple. It looks like you also have one that is in foal that's from the family of Bolt Doro and Global Campaign, right?
Yeah, we do. So that's exciting, and she's in foal to Enticed. A couple exciting prospects.
Yeah, it's an interesting catalog. Do you feel like this is one of the better catalogs you've seen recently for among your sales?
Yeah, definitely in terms of broodmares, and it's interesting to see the shift. You know, people getting more comfortable with selling their better broodmares now and throughout the whole year. People, when I started, were a little timid to sell broodmares during the summer, but it's good to see the shift that people are making.
Yeah, it's kind of a developing thing. Let's talk about that for a minute. What is it? What do you, what do you tell prospective sellers? You know, what are the benefits to them of selling through Wanamakers?
Yeah, for them, you know, definitely in terms of broodmares, it benefits sellers with not having to carry their broodmares until November or into the winter, just having consistent sales year round, and people are getting more used to them as well. And then for racehorses, they don't have to go out of training or ship anywhere. And people really started liking buying broodmares online because then they don't get exposed to the sales grounds and all the germs that come with that, especially for young foals. It can be quite traumatic for them going to the sales ground. So it makes it a lot easier just to have them straight off their farm and go straight to the buyer and not get exposed to anything.
Well, I would think another thing that's sort of helpful, too, from a buyer and a seller perspective in some sense, is with broodmares, to a certain extent, they're you don't need to see them up close necessarily. Kind of their value gets established by the thing they're breeding and the things they do.
Yeah, exactly. It's mostly on paper, and you can see their produce history and everything about them. And if you want to go see them, you can, but for the most part, with broodmares, people don't have to go see them or travel anywhere.
We're talking with Liza Hendricks of Wanamakers.com. Next sale coming up Thursday, July 27, starting at 8 a.m. and closing, the first set closing at 5 p.m. So 19 horses in this catalog, Liza. And a couple that caught my eye, you got a couple of two-year-olds in there that seem like they might be a little bit interesting, including a colt by Carpe Diem.
We do, yeah, and that colt's an Oklahoma bred too, and they were excited to give it a shot. And then we have one in Kentucky as well. And then with the racehorses, we have a couple New York breds. And we might have some supplemental entries coming up too, another New York bred. So you have to keep an eye on the website.
Oh, okay. So supplemental entries coming up. Is it when should people expect those to appear?
They'll be up this weekend. Yep.
Up this weekend. Okay. So plenty of time in advance of the July 27th sale to review those. So 19 in this catalog. Now, you guys are doing this every month, so give us the kind of timeline for the August sale.
Yeah, so for our August sale, entries close August 22nd. The catalog will be out the next day, the 23rd, and then they will sell on the 31st.
All right, so if you got a horse to sell or are looking to buy, we've got July 27 is the next Wanamakers.com sale, and then August 31st, the next sale per se, with earlier dates being August 22 to get your entries in, August 23 for the catalog to be up for you to start reviewing the horses on offer. So Wanamakers.com, the website. So when I go to the website, if I'm looking to buy, what do I do, Liza?
Yeah, so you can just click on the catalog tab and browse the entries. And if you want to get a little more info, you can click on the buy tab, and it gives you all the information and the process for buying.
All right, perfect. So Wanamakers.com is the website. Liza Hendricks, thanks for joining us. July 27 is the next sale at Wanamakers.com. 19 horses on offer, including broodmares and a couple of two-year-olds. Thanks for joining us, and good luck with the sale.
Thank you so much.
That was Liza Hendricks, Wanamakers.com. And once again, Wanamakers.com, monthly horse auction. You can buy a new horse for yourself. July 27th, that's taking place. Starting early, ending late. It's a pretty good way to pick up a horse if you're looking to pick up a horse. All right, so later on in today's program, going to have Cricket Goodall going to join us from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. She's going to be about closing the show, so maybe around 10:45, and talking about the annual yearling show coming up Sunday in Timonium. Chance to see maybe some of the stars of the future in Maryland racing. A lot of good horses have come through the yearling show. It's really it's fairly remarkable, including Hall of Famer safely kept, among many others. So some millionaires, some really good horses. So are the stars of the future going to be out Sunday? Maybe so. And Cricket's going to join us right around 10:45 or thereabouts to preview that event for us. Now, want to switch gears here a little bit. Jockey Andre Ramjeet is based at Charlestown and was starting to kind of come around and had a pretty good last about 6 weeks from about June 1st. He was around seventh among Charlestown jockeys in wins from June 1st to about July 15th and won, I think, seven races, winning about a 16 or 17% clip. And in the first race on July 15th, his mount clipped heels with a runner in front of him. He came off. A horse went over top of him. A really frightening injury. He's going to be okay. We don't know if he's going to ride again, but he will walk again, and that's a pretty good thing. But it was a scary injury, and his wife, Julie Ramjeet, is also his agent, and I wanted to talk with her about this experience. She's got some stuff to say and got some things to say about how it happened and why it happened and maybe what could be done to prevent it from happening again. This interview, we're going to do it in two parts here, both today, but here's the first part of my conversation with agent and wife of Andre Ramjeet, Julie Ramjeet. Julie, hello. Thanks so much for joining us on Off to the Races Radio. And let's start with obviously what I think is the most important question now. How is Andre doing?
He is home from the hospital. Praise God. He came home last night or yesterday evening. He's in pretty rough shape, but he's alive and breathing and has legs. So we're trying to count our blessings here. He can be doing right now.
Which I guess, as you say, you count your blessings. It's kind of the most you can hope for after a frightening spill like that. And we'll talk about the spill in a minute. But I wanted to ask you this first. I mean, you've been very sort of vocal on social media about this and about sort of dangerous riding and whatever. And you said to me off air that some folks sort of have responded to you as sort of, oh, it's the sort of emotionally overwrought wife upset that her husband got injured and maybe not giving you the credit for the depth of your background in the industry. So maybe if you talk a little bit about your sort of history with horses and horse racing as a way to kind of tee up the rest of the conversation.
Sure. So, and I appreciate that opportunity. Of course, I naturally have emotion. Yes. You know, you naturally have that emotion when you love someone and you see something unjust being done to them. But I would have been just as vocal if it was another rider that I have represented as an agent for before. I started riding horses myself when I was a very young girl. I got introduced to the racetrack and thoroughbreds when I was 16, actually Charlestown. I was born and raised here. I started galloping at the track back then. I don't even know how many years ago that was, probably almost 20 years ago. You were allowed to be licensed at 16. And on my 16th birthday, that's all I wanted to do, was be able to gallop a thoroughbred. So I was at the time working on a farm for a local trainer, and I found my way in there, and I got a leg up, and that's what I did for my 16th birthday. So I started there. I galloped for a little while. I played around with some groom positions, ran some horses, went away to college, came home 2021. Came right back to the track. You know, I guess it's true. If it's in your blood, you really can't ever leave it alone. And I have done it all, really. I have, from being on the horse's back, I haven't rode races, but like I said, I used to ride hunter jumpers, but I've galloped race horses. I've been a groom for several good outfits. I've been a hot walker. I have just hustled and ran horses at night. And that all stopped. I took a job for Joan Reynolds, and I was approached, this had to be about almost 9 years ago, I was approached by a rider who was a good friend of mine at the time, Christian Almo, and he found me in the shed row one morning, and he said, "Hey, you know, why are you working so hard? You know everybody out here, you know? You know everybody out here. You should really take a shot at being an agent, and I need one." And I was like, "Okay." So I don't know how he really convinced me, but I think he made it sound really, really good. And I was working in like 0 degree weather, so I was like, "Why not give it a shot?" So I tried it. I took my agent test, and I took his book, which was short lived because as soon as I took his book, he told me he was leaving. But I have
good career advice right there.
Right. But it was, you know what? He opened up a door for me that I don't know if I would have opened myself. He showed me, you know, that I could. And I went on and had several very successful riders, and all at Charlestown over the years. I had Louis Batista's book many years ago. I won my first stake race as an agent with him. I had a few bug riders. I did really well at Charlestown with Ivan Perez when he had the bug. I worked with Sylvester Carmuch on his last run before he walked his way out of there. And then I took a little hiatus. I moved to Florida in 2016. My husband at the time, he wasn't my husband yet, but he was already in Florida. And we connected down there, and you know, we here we are years later with three children, and moved back to West Virginia about a year and a half ago. And that that came about because while we were down in Florida, Andre was working at Gulfstream, and he was, you know, fighting the good fight, trying to ride down there with some of the best in the country. And he just was kind of at the bottom of the totem pole. And then COVID hit, and Gulfstream came down and said, "Okay, you either have to ride or gallop." And at the time, we were facing, we knew we had upcoming open heart surgery on the table for our four-year-old at that time. And we had already had such a good medical team that the option to ship out, because everybody was asking, you know, "Why are you guys staying in Florida? He should be going and riding somewhere." Well, the man has always put his family first, always. So he said, "I will stay down here and work until she's cleared. And when she's cleared, we will go wherever, you know, where I think I'll have the best opportunity." So in that time, he worked, he took a, Gulfstream said, "You can't gallop and ride races." That was at the beginning of COVID. They didn't want the like cross contamination, you know, from the backside to the jockstrom or vice versa, I guess. And Andre didn't feel comfortable enough hanging up his gallop job because he was just in really tough at Gulfstream. Couldn't rely on that paycheck as a jockey down there at the time. And, he took a couple pay jobs for David Fox and Eddie Paliza, and he was also working a part-time job selling car parts at Advanced Auto, and that was the struggle. So, you know, I watched him sit out then for different reasons, better reasons, in my opinion. Yeah. But I watched him sit out, take a back seat. You know, we walked the walk with our daughter. She got through her open heart surgery. Team at Joe DiMaggio down there in Hollywood, Florida, because they were just the best. And then when we got cleared, I said, all right, where are we going? I told you, you know, you walk this with us. I'll support you and wherever you want to go. And it's your time now. And it was between Louisiana and Charlestown, because those were the two places he had most success at when he was a bug. And I wasn't really willing to go from Miami to New Orleans at the time with children. The country sounded a little bit more appealing. And, of course, I was from here, so I said, well, I'll go back to Charlestown with you. So we came back, and we got a little farm here at the beginning of 2021, about 6 acres, where we take in off-track thoroughbreds. I've taken in some old retired racetrack ponies that'll live their rest of their days out here. And that was my thing. I was going to have the farm, and he was going to have his, you know, get to do what he wanted to do. When we started back, my mom is actually also an agent, and I didn't want to come back and work for him. And it wasn't that I didn't want to come back and work for him. It's that I didn't really want to be a part of it. You know, I wanted to be able to cheer him on. I wanted to focus on the farm and kind of set the business aside and just let him have, you know, I just wanted to let his star shine, and I just wanted to take a back seat and clap. So my mom took his book for the first year, and then she had some changes come about, and he made a shift. He tried a different agent for a month or so, and that really didn't work out in his benefit. So we kind of reconvened, and I said, okay, I guess it doesn't make sense to pay anybody else out 25% when I can do the job, right?
I'm talking to Julie Ramsey. Sorry, go ahead. I talked over you.
No, I'd say I took him over about probably 6 months ago. Yeah, about the beginning of the – say close to the beginning of this year, I took the book over, and we've been rolling ever since until this weekend.
Talking with Julie Ramsey, jockey agent for her husband, Andre Ramsey, who suffered a frightening injury July 15th in the first race. And obviously that's an emotional blow. It's a family blow. It's a financial blow because you guys work together as well. Tell us about the injury itself, the incident that led to it. What kind of explain what happened?
Yeah, sure. So, it was Saturday night. It was his last night of racing for the Charlestown, you know, weekly card. You know, they only run 3 days a week. So the card's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursday night was a great night for him. He rode 8-1-2. He rode the whole card. He just was so happy. You know, I mean, this is a man who had to sit out. So now he got to ride a full card. And even if I don't even think if he got a winner, he still would have been just as happy. Fast forward to Saturday. He went from riding 8 on Thursday, but he only had one Saturday, step one in the second race, which he did not end up getting to ride, and the horse ended up winning. So he went out to ride the first, thinking it was just going to be, you know, when he walked out the door, he told his kids, I'll be right back. And it was a horse that he had ridden before. It's kind of a beauty and a curse at Charlestown, but the guys work so much in the morning galloping their mounts, but it's also kind of beautiful because at nighttime, you know, all the work pays off. So they kind of, most of them know what they're riding, you know, when they go out there. So it wasn't we didn't have any qualms about the mount he was on. So they broke out of the starting gate. They were going 7/8. Nobody went for the lead. He went to the front. He sat on the rail. He was the number 3, and he took the lead. He slowed the pace down. They were going pretty slow. In his words, he said, I was just going to sit there and walk the dog. Coming down the backside, he's still in the lead. You can kind of see his horse start to, and it was the first time we stretched the horse going out 7/8. You know, we wanted to see what the horse would do with a little distance. So we didn't really expect him to fire huge there, but we wanted to try him. So down the backside, you see his horse kind of starting to die a little bit. And here come the cavalry. And some horses on his outside start to come around him. And key word, come around him. So they had seen him on the rail the whole race. He led the race. Instead of making sure when they came around him that they had proper clearance, they came around him without any due diligence and shut it down. And before he knew it, I mean, it was one of the hardest falls I've seen. I've seen many, and I'm talking about in general. He clipped heels with the five. It wasn't the five's fault. They ended up disqualifying the number seven and placing him last. They're saying, you know, the outside horse pushed the five, which made Andre drop. But it was careless. It was, two more strides forward before the kid comes down. They're clear and nobody gets hurt. I'll quote my husband because he's currently medicated and unable to speak for himself. But the night that he went to the hospital, his words were, "I had no horse. I wasn't sending in there. They didn't have to do that to me." So he remembers what happened, although he didn't remember that when he fell down, the bug boy, Abnel Bocachica, went over top of him. And thank God he was okay. He was able to walk out of that and back into the room. I believe he finished riding the rest of the night. So he was lucky to walk away from that. But, yeah, it was really bad. It was something that could have been totally avoided. And I think the premise here I really want to get across is it's not the first fall I've seen my husband take. And I know how to process that. I know it comes with the business and, you know, whether it's a freak thing or it's an accident, even if it's jockey error, if it's an accident, you know, I mean, things do happen in horse racing, but it's a little harder to swallow when certain things have been continuously happening over and over and over again. And my husband's tried to bring certain things to light there or to the steward's attention, and nothing was ever done, and now he's laying on the ground. So that's where the extra emotion comes from, because, of course, nobody knows that my husband had called fouls that were disallowed, and I have them dated, actually, because I'm a very factual girl. What do I have? Seven, well, including the incident. So we'll take out the incident from Saturday night. You've got six fouls that he had tried to claim, four being involving the same rider that caused him to go down since January. So that's a little frustrating to say the least, because he tried to get their attention before it ever happened. And I just think that whether it be Andre or any other rider, I think it's time to really wake up and pay more attention, because it's just a little too late now, right? I feel like if these riders are reprimanded a little harder to do a better job, you know, and to be more responsible. And at some tracks, they are. There are some tracks that I've seen stewards, you know, really come down heavy-handed. And even Andre agreed, you know, he'd rather have a heavy-handed steward than feel like he has no protection at all. And that really is the case here. I mean, sure, we can blame rider error all day, but riders are supposed to have somebody to answer to.
That was part one of our interview with Julie Ramjeet, wife of and agent for injured jockey Andre Ramjeet. In the second part, coming up momentarily, she'll discuss some of the things that maybe ought to happen to prevent injuries like this in the future. Just a reminder, coming up after the second part of our interview with Julie Ramjeet, Cricket Goodall of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association going to join us and discuss the upcoming MHBA yearling show that takes place Sunday morning starting at 9 a.m. in Timonium, a chance to see some of the future stars of Maryland racing. Now part two of our interview with Julie Ramjeet. You're listening to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com.
I'm curious, because I know, like, just as a fan or a bettor, or I used to own horses, but, you know, you watch a race and somebody goes down and it's horrifying, but it's different for you when it's your husband and your client and the father of your children. Can you express to us what that moment feels like when you see that happen?
You made tears come to my eyes.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm here to be as genuine and as open, you know, and I hope maybe something good comes from it. It was This one Saturday night was one of the worst feelings I ever felt in my life. And granted, you know, 10 minutes ago, I was just telling you a couple years ago, we were walking through open heart surgery with our 4-year-old. And I said that was the scariest moment of my life, live with my 9-year-old daughter.
Oh,
and she doesn't watch every race, but she liked the horse's name. The horse's name was Monkey Wrench. And, you know, she was joking, monkey, monkey, you know, I want to watch. So she was hanging over my shoulder, and when it happened, I dropped the phone. I just instantly went, I don't know. I can't even tell you. It's hell. It feels like everything just stops. And then my daughter, of course, was losing it, and I was not well at that moment either. So my attention wasn't on her at the time, but I immediately had to pick up the phone and call my friends that I do have at the track, the Outrider, another jockey wife that I know is always there. And by that time, people there too were also trying to call me to tell me he was laying on the track and he wasn't moving. And when I had a few minutes to gather what his condition was like, I then went and found my daughter, you know, balled up, crying on the bed because she just witnessed something that she had never seen in her life. And so I had to hug her and console her and tell her daddy's going to be okay. And in reality, I inside myself did not know that, did not know if he was going to be okay. It was a very hard fall. One of the Outriders has been out there most of her whole life. And she said when she saw his face, I mean, she started to cry. She was terrified. So she knew it was pretty bad, and it was awful. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's the worst feeling. I actually teased him a little bit, and we can lighten it up just a second, because I said, you know, maybe I should go out there one time just so you can see the anxiety that you give me, you know. But in that conversation, you know, it's not him that makes me nervous. I don't get nervous watching him ride. I don't get nervous watching him ride next to certain riders. And that says a lot. But there are people that when he is next to, I get uncomfortable because I know they're not going to look out for him. And I find that to be very senseless. I don't understand the newer age guys that have, and not all of them, but a lot of them, some of these younger guys, you know, I know they want to win, but they want to win without regard to human life. And that I'll never understand, because you can win and still ride a smart race and still care for your inside folks and still look out for your brothers out there. That's what it used to be. It used to be a family. Sure, it's competitive, but we all looked out for each other. Doesn't seem to be the tone at Charlestown these days.
Yeah, obviously the most important thing is everybody walks away at the end,
right.
People aren't looking out for that. That's obviously deeply troubling. All right, last thing, and we will let you go. I mean, one of the things the racing gets a lot of stuff wrong, as we've talked about a little bit, but one of the things that the community at large always does well is kind of pull together for each other. I know you guys have started a GoFundMe, and it sounds like that's off to a pretty good start. So tell us about that. Tell us about the kind of community support, and also where folks can track down the GoFundMe and help out if they're so inclined.
Sure. So the local, I can't say so much for the local jocks room. That's sad to say, but we haven't even heard from any of the riders involved with dropping him. As far as they know, he could still be, they know nothing. They've never reached out to check on him. We had several riders, three, and three the night that it happened, and then a few more after did have called him since he's been home. But mostly the support is coming from a lot of my local owners he rode for. He's gotten a lot of support from Gulfstream. You know, that's where he came from. So a lot of the riders there, his valet there, jockeys there, his jockey's friends in Maryland, because he ships in there and he rode there when he was a bug. I got a lot from Maryland that have been checking on him. Actually got Xavier Perez, jockey up there. That's who's going to come down and help represent him in Movies, which is tomorrow. And for those of you that don't know what Movies is, they're going to review the race replay and try to make a decision of who's at fault and what kind of punishment they deserve for that. So we've gotten a lot of love from some horsemen and some friends that know him. But Steve Rushing reached out to me. I mean, that's like the number one agent in the world. So I've had people touching base all over. It was actually a lady out of Mountaineer, and I'm going to say her name wrong. Please forgive me. And I think it's Zulima, or I'm totally butchering that probably. But anyway, she does a lot for PDJF and the Guild, and she kind of recommended, you know, hey, you should probably start a GoFundMe. Andre's not a Guild member, so that makes things extra tough. So I started a GoFundMe for him myself. You can find it on my Twitter. So if you go to @JulieRamjeet and scroll down, I've been very open in sharing all of this stuff. You'll find it there. It's also shared to my Facebook, which is public. You can find me on Facebook, Julie Ramjeet. And I'm sure if you just Google GoFundMe jockey Andre Ramjeet, it'll probably come up in your Google search. We've been able to raise a little over $6,000 in about a day and a half, which is amazing. Amazing. Did have some friends who've been in certain similar situations tell me about another foundation that I need to look into. I think it's called the Jockey Net Foundation or something. It's supposed to be kind of a safety blanket to help injured riders. I haven't gotten a chance yet. Obviously my plate is super full.
You have a lot going on. Yeah.
So there's another little foundation I'm going to reach out to try to get him some help. I know Charlestown does have a Horseman's Assistance Fund that was put on by some of the riders. Some of the riders chose to donate certain percentage, I guess, of their earnings to be able to create kind of a little help. It's not much. Every rider that is qualified for it is only able to get $5,000, but it helps with a mortgage payment or, you know, light bills or something like that. So I did get the paperwork from our HPPA people here, and I'm going to have that dropped off tomorrow. So I know that he has a little bit of help from his horsemen at Charlestown in that sense. It's just anybody that, you know, even if you're not donating, if you're just sharing it, you know, the message here for me is, of course, my husband's out now, right? So I can't fight for him in a sense of securing business. But I can try to at least spread the message of what happened and try to make something different so that it doesn't happen so carelessly again, and maybe the next guy doesn't get to walk away in a back brace. The message to me is even bigger than the donations, because I just think it's time for a real turn of tides, especially here. With the riders having more protection and better listening, and it's avoidable. Things like this are avoidable. Things like this don't have to lead to somebody, a wife, you know, trying to raise $20,000 on GoFundMe so I can, you know, so we can support the household and the kids and everything. I mean, it's not ideal. But I'm very grateful. I'm very, very grateful that he's alive, and that we do have the love that we are getting. We do have a lot of good people on our side, and those will always be our people. So, you know, it's just going to one day at a time, right? You just got to keep walking.
It's Andre Ramjeet is the injured jockey that got a GoFundMe. We'll have that up on theracingbiz.com shortly, and you can find Julie Ramjeet on Facebook, Twitter, and find the address for that if you want to pitch in. Julie Ramjeet, thank you so much for joining us here on Off to the Races. We will keep you and Andre and your whole family in our thoughts and give them our best.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. And you guys won't be seeing Andre in the Winner's Circle anytime soon, but you guys can definitely follow me as I share updates on his journey. I don't like to just share the travesty. I'll share the good moments too when he starts to feel a little better. So I appreciate you reaching out, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak on it and kind of bring attention to the fundraiser. And anybody who's willing to share, or any donation is not too small. We appreciate it. It helps us more than I can explain. So I'm really grateful that you brought me on today, and thank you.
Definitely some food for thought there from Julie Ramjeet, wife of and agent for injured jockey Andre Ramjeet. We'll be having a story up on the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com, in the next couple days. And we'll have links there to the GoFundMe. And as she said, you can find her on Twitter and Facebook. Julie Ramjeet is the handle if you're looking for ways to help out the Ramjeet family during these difficult times. And obviously everybody here at the Racing Biz and Off to the Races wishing Andre and Julie and their family the best going forward. It's a tough game, and it's a sobering reminder of the challenges that jockeys face really every day. So important stuff to have a conversation about. We're going to get to Cricket Goodall from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association in just a moment. Preview the MHBA yearling show taking place in Timonium tomorrow, Sunday at 9 a.m. Just quick previewing racing today. Laurel Park going at 12:25, Delaware Park at 12:30, Charlestown 7 o'clock, Colonial Downs 1:30. They got a couple stakes on the docket at Colonial, the Andy Guest being one of those, and the Van Cleef being the other. Post time at Colonial 1:30, and a noontime first post at Monmouth Park today. Monmouth has the Haskell Stakes, Grade One Haskell is today, as well as the Grade One United Nations on the turf. So it's the biggest day of the year at Monmouth Park, and big card there. So that's what's going on around the region today. And of course, Laurel's the only kind of regional track racing on Sundays, and then everybody else kind of picks it up midweek. So that's what's happening in racing today. Let's now bring in Cricket Goodall from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association to discuss the upcoming yearling show taking place tomorrow in Timonium. Cricket, good morning. Thanks for joining me on Off to the Races Radio this morning. We appreciate it. It's the 89th annual Maryland Horse Breeders Association yearling show taking place Sunday in Timonium. Let's start with the housekeeping. Can anybody come and see the yearling show if they're so inclined?
Hi, Frank. Yeah, thanks for having me. Absolutely. We are at the north end of the Maryland State Fairgrounds in their horse show ring Sunday starting at 9 a.m. We have about 70 yearlings entered, so likely to be going into early afternoon. We have four classes, and we'd love to have spectators. It's supposed to be a nice weekend, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, let's hope so, because some of the weekends of the yearling show, it has been approximately a million degrees in Timonium. So let's hope for a nice weekend. Now, you mentioned four classes. What are those classes? How do you split these horses up?
Them by their sire. So we have two classes for Maryland sired and two classes for out-of-state sired, split by sex. So one for fillies and one for colts and geldings. And they're all Maryland-bred horses, so they've all been foaled here. And some of the classes obviously are by Maryland stallions, and some are by out-of-state stallions. And that's how we've always done it.
The idea here is, so we have a judge, and we'll talk about the judge in a minute, and he picks basically the horses that he thinks are the best looking. I think a lot of people would think, oh, well, if you have out-of-state sires, they're usually going to win the biggest prize. But certainly last year it was a bandbox colt. It was a local stallion who had the top yearling.
Right. And the reserve was forced to pass. So we had two local stallions. So the judge has no idea of the pedigree. So he's a trainer. We intend to have trainers, and they do not know the pedigree of the horses. So they are looking at them, what we tell them or ask them to look at them like they're looking at a sale to buy a yearling that's going to be a racehorse. So they are not likely to pick the horse that's got the braids or, you know, a fancy halter, or they're going to look for what they would actually work with, you know, to be a racehorse. And that's the way it's been. The show in its original form was in the infield at Pimlico the day after the Preakness, and the Preakness winning trainer was the judge. Now that was probably 85 years ago. No, I mean, that was quite a while ago that that's the way it worked, but that's how it started. And so the intention is to have a trainer, or we have had bloodstock agents, but again, folks who look at racehorses, look for racehorses. And some of them have been very successful and some of them aren't. But the horses that show that day, Frank, get prize money the day of the show, and then they also are rewarded with a purse premium for when they race. So the highest earning as a 2- and 3-year-old, they actually get a $20,000. They split a $20,000 purse premium of the top four horses. So there's a benefit that day for the entrance, and then down the road a piece. So the original person who enters the horse, shows the horse, will get a premium if the horse has the highest earnings, even though they may not own that horse later. So there's a lot of incentives for people to show their horses.
Yeah, no, for sure. And well, let's talk about the judge. Last year you had Jonathan Thomas, grade one winning trainer. He trained, people might remember, Catholic Boy, who won, I believe, the Travers, and also won a grade one on the turf. So pretty good feat there. Who do we have lined up for this year?
So we have Ned Allard coming to judge the show this year, and he's I hope people remember, he's a Hall of Fame. He trained Hall of Famer Mom's Command when she was in her heyday. She won the Triple Tiara for fillies in 1985, and many, you know, several other really good filly stakes. So she was a really nice racehorse, and he's still training to this day. He's based at Delaware, but he's had a lot of good horses over the years, and that's what we're looking for, a person who has an eye for the yearlings. And actually, I talked to him about the show at the 2-year-old sale and mentioned that, you know, we'd love to have him sometime, and that's how it worked out. He was there looking at horses. So that's just what we, you know, that's a good place for us to talk to trainers, because they're doing what we're going to ask them to do.
We're talking with Cricket Goodall, Executive Director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, here on Off to the Races. Cricket and the MHBA hosting the 89th annual yearling show for Maryland Breds coming up Sunday in Timonium at the fairgrounds, 9 a.m. sharp, if you want to check it out. Lots of good stuff there. Now, let's talk about some of the horses that have come through here. And it really, I mean, you mentioned there are both prizes for the top horses that day, and then there are purse premiums and for the horses that are the highest earners going forward. And you look at some of the horses that get the purse premiums, and you're looking at horses like Sharing, who was a Breeders' Cup winner, and Catherine Sophia, who was a grade one winner, and, you know, a ton of really nice horses have come through this event.
Absolutely. Safely Kept came through as a yearling, and a good filly named Urbane also showed there, and Ain't Too Fast to Catch, a local hero. So, you know, we have the right place to look, not only for, you know, the judge to judge them, but I think people are now coming to the show to look at yearlings by certain sires, you know, to see what they look like and before they get to the sales. We also have, because quite a few of the yearlings do go to sales here in Maryland and Kentucky, we do also have pinhookers coming to the sale, sort of trying to get a preview of what they might see in the fall or, you know, later in the year. So all of that's worked out really well, and a lot of it is because they can find some, you know, not maybe not even diamonds in the rough. The horses, you know, are prepared for the sale, so it's not like you're, but, you know, they see them before they get to see them at the sale. So that's nice. And for stallions, I agree. I think it's a good place for them to show off the progeny if they can do that, because that helps them next year when they, you know, if they have a breeder who sees a nice crop of, you know, whatever stallion they're interested in, then they're likely to breed to him next year.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always find interesting, too, is what a – I mean, and I know you say you're trying to get trainers to be the judges primarily and to look at it as a trainer would. If I'm at the yearling sale, do I buy this horse? they're pretty good judges. I mean, a lot of times they're picking horses that go on to do pretty good things in their careers. So it's, I think a lot of times for people, they look at sales and it feels like a crapshoot because there are a million examples of expensive horses that don't go on to do anything. But these guys are pretty good at this. They pick horses that very often turn around and do things on the racetrack.
Yeah, exactly. And it's what's really interesting is different judges, different trainers have a different way of judging. Some trainers can deal with minor, might seem like flaws to other people, but they've trained a horse that's had a, you know, whatever that situation is. And so they can, you know, the people watching the show don't always agree with the judges' selections because, as I said earlier, they may not be the shiniest and the, you know, the shiny feet, and they are a horse that trainer thinks it's either going to grow into a horse that he thinks he can train, or he's seen that issue before if it's got what other people deem as an issue. One thing they all like is a good walk. And so that's what we do. The judge is in the middle of the ring and he looks at them walking around the ring, but then he also looks at the walk, you know, to him in a way, just as he would at the sales. And everybody wants a nice, long, you know, good walk. So we try to encourage people who are going to show their horses to, you know, practice. Don't bring a horse that has hardly been, you know, in the barn or handled at that age. I mean, a lot of people don't bring their yearlings in really to prepare for sales till about now. But, you know, the more practice the horse gets and he can walk around with some intelligence and looking, you know, like he's interested without being too, you know, without being too excited, I guess, is, you know, going to a show is a big deal because most of these babies haven't been off the farm since they were born or, you know. So I think it's a good, it also helps when they go to the sales because you've done this preparation, hopefully weeks of preparation before you come to the show. And then when they get to the sales, it's not a whole new thing for them.
So from your end, from your perspective as a person who runs the horse breeders and you've been doing this for a few years, do you have any kind of moments or memories out of past yearling shows that stand out to you?
Well, I'll give you my own memory. So I used to show yearlings at the show before I worked here. And I showed for a few years because I had yearlings. That's what I did. And I won, and I can't remember the year I should. Anyway, Penny Tweedy judged. I had a client's chestnut colt that I was showing. He did not have white socks, but anyway, somehow he brought back memories for her because I was the grand champion that year with this yearling. And in my memory, he didn't look a thing like Secretariat, but apparently my luck was that Penny Tweedy thought he did or something because she was champion and my owners were thrilled. And so that was really fun. It's really exciting to see people be rewarded for the work they put into these horses and then watch the horses go on and be really, you know, a good horse. That makes everyone feel like, you know, the breeding business is working. And we are the only state that does this in this capacity. I believe Virginia has a Virginia bred show, but not with the kind of purse premiums later, you know, that reward them when they race. I could be wrong, but I don't believe any other state has a state bred yearling show except for possibly Virginia.
All right. Any last thoughts, last pieces of trivia or other notes folks should be aware of?
Well, come on out and see it. It's fun. It'll be hot. It's Maryland and it's July, so we know it's going to be hot. But you can come for a little while and watch the horses, look at some yearlings and see if you see one you like. And we do have an amateur judging contest. And it's all in all, it's a nice day. It's hot, you're right. But and we thank you for joining us to announce that day because that's a big help to have the people watching know what's going on. So thank you, Frank.
Well, you're welcome. If people haven't gotten enough of listening to me here on Off to the Races, coming out to the Yearling Show tomorrow, I will be announcing. But it is a good day. It's a fun day and a chance to see what often some of the future stars of Maryland racing. So you might get a little preview of what's to come. Cricket Goodall of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, thanks so much for joining me here on Off to the Races.
Thanks for having me, Frank, and I will see you Sunday.
And that'll do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending some of your Saturday morning with us. We appreciate it as always. Thanks, too, to our show's supporters. Those include Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, the stallion standing at Northview, and Wanamakers.com online horse auction site. Thanks to all our guests. This week's show featured Julie Ramsey, Maryland Horse Breeders Association Executive Director Cricket Goodall, and Liza Hendricks from Wanamakers.com. You can keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice from Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you in the winner's circle. We'll